Ian should walk away, happy that Gentry could create the family she wanted for Colt. But no rationale lessened the ache in his chest from being on the outside of the little family. Gentry and Smith caught him staring at them. Luckily, his phone rang, giving him something to do. He turned sideways, answering it without looking at the screen.
Hello?
Ian? Came a familiar voice. The timing seemed significant.
Farah?
Yes. She paused. Are you free today? I need to see you.
What's wrong?
I've been doing a lot of thinking, especially after seeing you last weekend. Her voice wobbled. We ended so abruptly. I really want to talk. Can you come over, please?
He'd promised Gentry he'd stay here in case things went south with Smith. But things weren't going south at all. In fact, he suspected Gentry thought things were rather looking up.
Ian? Farah begged. Please?
He closed his eyes. Talking with Farah about what went wrong might help him better understand his feelings for Gentry, whether a relationship with her could fare better than the one with Farah. I'll be right over.
He hung up and ordered an Uber before alerting Gentry.
I have to go.
To see Farah? She raised that chin of hers like she did any time she was trying to hide her feelings.
Sorry, it can't wait.
Ian crossed to the front door, eager for fresh air.
Nice to meet you, Smith.
Colt started crying, possibly picking up on the tension in the house. Ian slipped out the front door to wait for the Uber driver. He'd barely had time to close the door before Gentry came outside.
What's going on?
He wanted to kiss her, to reassure her, to find a solution that didn't require him to walk away. But he couldn't make promises, so he said,
Farah needs me.
Why now?
Gentry's nostrils flared.
And why do you care? She dumped you.
I was a shitty fiancé.
He rubbed his forehead with the heel of his hand. Her jaw set, but she didn't argue.
When will you be home?
Home. That either of them thought of her condo as his home seemed absurd, yet true.
I don't know.
A black Kia pulled up to the curb. Ian reached out to touch Gentry, then let his arm fall.
You'll be fine. Smith seems like a good guy.
First, you tell me things didn't work out with her because she's too needy. Now you're ditching me because I'm not. Think about that, Ian.
She turned and went inside. 15 minutes later, the Uber driver dropped Ian off at the circular driveway of Farah's place on Southwest Harbor Way. The center island bloomed with clustered red flowers. He stared at the beige siding of the 4-story apartment building. Its appearance, neighborhood, and tiny balconies paled in comparison with the grandeur of Gentry's condominium and setting. Still, he had warm memories here. It had been a haven compared with his housing in Guatemala, Colombia, and Haiti. Farah had always welcomed him home, her gentle touch and kind heart a balm to the horrors he'd often experienced while away. Now, he shaded his eyes with one hand and peered at her balcony, where they'd enjoyed their morning coffee. Farah preferred peaceful routines. A bit of a homebody, she'd been content to bake or read or do whatever Ian suggested. Easygoing. The opposite of Gentry. Doubts about his coming here assailed him. What the hell was there to say after he'd let her down in every way?
accepting his discomfort as penance for taking her for granted. He took the stairs instead of the elevator to buy himself a few extra moments. He came through the stairwell door and turned left, passing Mrs. Montana's apartment. Farah stood in the hallway outside her door. The pile of blonde hair on top of her head spilled over, partially obscuring her face.
"Thanks for coming."
Her forced smile didn't cover red-rimmed eyes. He refrained from asking what was wrong because he knew, and he needed another minute to prepare for whatever she had to say.
"Of course."
He stepped inside and scanned the living space. Everything was neat and organized, like always. No picture out of place, no shoes discarded.
"I have a surprise, actually."
She waved him toward the kitchen.
"I made peach pie yesterday. It's really good."
Pie, his weakness, as she well knew.
"Never could turn down one of your pies."
The praise earned him a genuine smile. While she busied herself in the kitchen, he took in the beige corduroy sofa, the simple oak dining table, the frilly drapes on the boxy little windows. It all looked exactly as it had last month, yet felt entirely different, foreign, after living with Gentry.
"Coffee?"
"Sure." He heard the Keurig hum.
"Seeing you standing here, it's almost like you never left."
He looked at his feet to hide the betrayal of having already moved on. He shoved his hands in his pockets, his chest hollow.
"Not sure what to say to that."
"Maybe that was part of our problem. We talked about so many things, but never about us, except when we fought."
She plated a slice of pie. After setting it and a coffee cup on the breakfast bar, she slid onto the stool beside him and watched him eat.
It brought back memories of how she'd often sat there with him, smiling and chatting about her day.
Her attention had been comforting and pleasant, a peaceful escape from the turmoil of his many journeys. He'd loved her, still did, but not the way a man should love the woman he planned to marry. He cut through the flaky crust with the side of his fork. She watched him take his first bite, her scrutiny making him self-conscious.
"How are your folks?"
"Fine."
Her eyes bore into his. "But let's not waste time on that. Today, I want to talk about us."
"Me too."
He sipped the coffee, which she'd sweetened with 1 teaspoon of sugar, exactly how he liked it.
"I'd like to learn something from our mistakes."
She reached for his fork and sampled the pie. She'd done that a million times, too.
"After we got engaged, I always felt like you thought I was holding you back from your plans. Tell me, why haven't you returned to Haiti yet?"
"I bought a one-way ticket home because I couldn't afford the round-trip airfare."
He'd been sinking money into the foundation and assumed he'd have the engagement ring to hawk to buy a flight back.
"I stuck around to make some money and scare up some new donors."
Farah slid a cautious glance his way.
"Your new boss is pretty."
Ian nodded, keeping his eyes on the pie.
"I didn't see a wedding ring."
She shifted in her seat, dancing around the questions she really wanted to ask.
"Is her baby's father in the picture?"
"He's in California, although he's here today, visiting."
Ian took another bite of pie. The image of Smith and Gentry playing with Colt soured the taste of the pie's sweet filling.
"But I thought you wanted to talk about us, not Gentry."
"Sorry."
She scratched a spot by her ear.
"So you'll return to Haiti
Soon?
That's the plan.
The words came out on a sigh.
What's really on your mind, Farah?
Are you happy? She tipped her head. Happier than when you were home with me.
He couldn't give her the answer she probably wanted to hear. I don't know what you want me to say.
I want to know if you're happy. Is Sivak enough? That question sounded different coming from Farah than from Gentry.
Farah, he stalled, groping for the right words. I'm happier knowing I'm not letting you down anymore.
If you could do it all over again, would you do anything differently? He hesitated, but the truth came to him forcefully.
He wouldn't have gotten engaged just to appease her. I wouldn't have made you promises I couldn't keep.
Was it me? Was I too boring or clingy or something? Is that why you were always running off?
Only now, when comparing the reluctance he felt about leaving Gentry, could he see that his lack of passion for Farah might have been there all along. But he'd never hurt her with the truth. Not now, with nothing to gain.
You know I'm on a mission. You've always known that.
I do. She looked relieved when she clasped his hand. I've wanted to apologize for the way I handled things, especially at the end.
No need.
He patted her hand and then eased out of her hold. While she adjusted the loose knot of hair on her head, tucking stray bits behind her ear, he finished the pie.
She cleared her throat. Ian, I made a terrible miscalculation.
Farah,
let me finish.
He dreaded where this conversation seemed to be headed.
It wasn't easy to worry and pray for your safety all the time, but I did it. When we finally got engaged, I thought you'd spend more time here, get a job at the hospital, settle down, and start planning a family.
She frowned then.
When that didn't happen, I got frustrated. Even though you'd never promised to change, it wasn't fair of me to expect that from you.
Maybe not, but Gentry had shown him that his expectations were hardly reasonable.
It wasn't fair of me to expect you to settle for a part-time partner. You deserve more.
But that's just it. There isn't more. I love you.
Love isn't enough. We both know that.
He squeezed her hand, which she then clasped with her other hand.
There's someone else for you.
She shook her head.
No, Ian. You're irreplaceable.
That's not true. In time, you'll meet someone new who'll be a better fit for you and your life.
I don't want someone new, she grimaced. You know, I kept the ring because I thought you'd miss me and come begging for another chance. I never wanted us to be over.
As sorry as he was about her pain, he wasn't coming back.
I'm sorry.
Me too.
She swiveled to face him and gripped his thigh.
So, you forgive me?
There's nothing to forgive.
Her round blue eyes pled for a second chance.
Come home, Ian. I won't ever ask you to change. I'll stop teaching summer school and come with you for several weeks each summer, too.
Farah was a sweet girl. The kitchen cupboards contained a menagerie of gift mugs and candles, proving how well-liked she was by her students. She volunteered at her church and loved his mother. Had they stayed together, he'd have been faithful and content, maybe even happy, by his mother's definition.
but he would never have been happy, by Gentry's definition. That complicated woman, who'd fill her home with love as fierce as her temper, had blasted into his life and stolen his heart. She provoked him, challenged him, surprised him. Even if nothing permanent came from his time with her, he knew now the passion he ought to feel if he ever decided to marry. "You're saying that now because you're lonely."
"I'm not just lonely. I miss you, Ian. Don't you miss me?"
A tear rolled down her cheek as she hugged herself. Her weeping tormented him. If wrapping his arms around her would take the hurt away, he'd do it. But he couldn't ease Farah's pain any more than he could give Marie back to Timmy, or his father to his mom. He didn't like to lie, but in this case, a little fib would do more good than harm. "Sure, I miss you, but we can't pick up where things left off. We both know, eventually, you'd grow unhappy again." He clasped her hands after wiping her stray tear. "I'm sorry you are having a hard time, but the break has shown me that you made the right decision, Farah. Deep down, I think you know that too. So please, don't sit around here clinging to the dream of what you wanted us to be. Remember what we were, and all the reasons you got fed up in the first place. We can't be together anymore, but I'll always love you, and I'll always be your friend." Good speech, he thought, until she burst into tears. Then he knew he was in for a long night. Chapter 17.
Juggle. According to Merriam-Webster, to handle or deal with usually several things, such as obligations, at one time, so as to satisfy often competing requirements. According to me, an evening with Ian and Smith. At 6 a.m, Gentry sat on the living room floor, finishing a collage she'd worked on the previous night for Smith. The evening had gone as well as she could have hoped, allowing her worry to fade like a dream at dawn. Smith might have stayed into the night to give them a chance to learn more about each other and discuss parenting, but she'd sent him to the B&B after putting Colt to sleep. Had she known Ian would not return, she might not have shooed Smith away so early. Ian's absence nettled, like a pebble in a shoe. His cryptic late-night text, "Don't wait up," hadn't helped either. She'd distracted herself by working on the Charity campaign and printing out a bunch of photos of Colt to make a collage for Smith. By midnight, she'd given up her vigil. "She needs me," he'd said of Farah. Lying awake for most of the wee hours, Gentry had concocted 43 potential explanations for why he never returned. She certainly didn't hope for one involving an Uber accident. She preferred options that involved his mother, or happening upon another emergency and offering help, or Farah tying him up and stealing his phone so he couldn't leave. But regardless of the varied and strained explanations she dreamed up, deep down, she couldn't escape the most obvious one. He'd spent the night with his ex. Total dick move, but also not wholly unexpected. Those two had been engaged until recently. Maybe old feelings resurfaced. She'd wanted to believe that what had happened between Ian and her last weekend had meant something. Everything. Or at least a lot. He'd said so, and she'd thought him sincere. It had been a long, long time since she'd been taken for a fool, and she didn't like the feeling. She lumbered into the kitchen, dragging a week's worth of sleepiness with her. Although not particularly hungry, she scanned the refrigerator's contents. Almond milk, pineapple yogurt, strawberries, all Ian's favorites. She opted for the yogurt, collapsed onto a kitchen stool, and stabbed her spoon into the cup full of lumpy protein. While licking the spoon after her third bite, she heard the front door open and click shut. Ian's soft shuffle into the condo made her stomach flip. She slid off the stool and stormed into the living room, catching him by surprise.
"Look who decided to come back."
He stood there, hair matted on the left side of his head, rumpled shorts and shirt, staring at her. The deep lines around his mouth and between his brows revealed his exhaustion and no small amount of resignation. Contrition hovered around him like mist on a lake. Her own emotions, rage, rejection, betrayal, pulsed through her in alternating bursts. Pressure continued to build inside, and if she wasn't careful, pain would explode out of her. From the age of 10, she'd committed herself to never feeling this way. Obsessed, possessive, rejected, hurt. It surely said something about her, something not at all good, that she'd broken her rule for the man least willing or likely to return her feelings. "Good morning." He approached her, but she retreated. She swallowed hard, tempted to pretend Smith was asleep in her room. Not long ago, that was exactly what she would have done right before sending Ian packing.
"For some, maybe."
"Don't say that. I didn't sleep with Farah." "Not the way you think." Whatever that meant.
"Even if that's true, you bailed on me."
"I had to see her." He pulled an engagement ring out of his pocket, held it up as some kind of exculpatory evidence, and set it on the entry table. Gentry pulled her thumbnail away from her mouth.
"Why now?"
"Until several weeks ago, we were planning a life together, Gentry. It ended abruptly. There were things to say and sort out."
"She's hurting." "She wants you back?"
"Yes." Her gaze went to the engagement ring on the entry table.
"And you said no?"
"I did. I felt like shit, with her sobbing all over my shirt, and me knowing I've moved on without much heartache at all." He scrubbed his hands through his hair. "I couldn't leave her alone like that. So I stayed. When she finally fell asleep, I spent the rest of the night in self-reflection, most of which made me feel worse."
"Because of me?"
"Because of me." Ian closed his eyes, shaking his head. "Because I don't want to repeat the same mistakes or hurt anyone else." He glanced at the collage project on the floor. "You and Smith hit it off."
"He makes it easy, but I sent him home early so you and I could talk. Little did I know I'd be waiting in vain."
He reached for her hands, searching her gaze. "You don't like waiting." His touch settled her for the first time in 10 hours.
"Patience isn't one of my virtues, if I have any at all."
He squeezed her hands. "I did a lot of thinking last night. As much as I care for you and Colt, I also care about my plans with Archer. Any relationship with me will require a lot of waiting around."
"Not if I give you incentive to return often."
She wound her arms around his neck and kissed him. He responded like fire, but she could feel his fatigue and hers. Ian cupped her face with his hands and touched his forehead to hers. She released a sigh.
I'm spending the afternoon with Smith and Colt. My family's joining us all for dinner here.
He eased away.
Oh.
Would you like to join us?
I don't know if that's best. He yawned again.
You might feel differently once you've slept.
She motioned toward the stairs and watched him lumber up to his room. When she heard his bedroom door click shut, she turned. Sunlight sparkled off the small diamond ring he'd abandoned on the entry table. She crossed to it, sneaking a peek over her shoulder before lifting it up for inspection.
A half carat or so, classic round cut in a white gold setting.
Without thinking, she slipped it on her finger and held out her hand, imagining how it might feel to have someone, have him, make her that promise. Her ring finger tingled with warmth as she pictured Ian sliding something similar on her hand. She got so lost in her daydream that she didn't hear him come back down the stairs until he cleared his throat.
Oh,
she jumped, clutching her hand to her chest.
I thought you went to lie down.
I did, but then I remembered the ring. I want to put it someplace safe until I can sell it. He stared at her finger. Not exactly the place I had in mind, although it looks pretty on your hand. She guessed her face must look like a maraschino cherry. Grimacing, she tugged at the ring, but it wouldn't clear her knuckle.
Sorry.
He clasped her wrist and laid her hand on his, looking at the ring, then looking at her. His green eyes looked translucent in the light coming through the windows.
Let me.
He drew her hand up to his mouth and sucked the length of her ring finger to wet it, then twisted the ring loose and tucked it in his pocket.
I'll miss you.
The words fell from her lips.
And I you.
He stared at her. She couldn't tell if the intensity of his gaze was because he had too many or too few things to say.
I wish...
What? That they'd met under different circumstances? Sure. But she didn't wish away Smith and Colt, because Colt gave her life more meaning and purpose than anything or anyone. He kissed her again. We'll talk later, when my head's clearer. She watched him go upstairs, and then wandered into the living room. She studied the collage, staring at father and son. Smith would be a part of Colt's life no matter what Gentry decided. Would pursuing Ian make her a bad mother? Or did she owe Colt a chance at having the stability of two parents under one roof? When Smith entered Gentry's condo that evening, all conversation stopped, with the exception of Ty's vrooming his truck along the floor and Colt's whimpering. Those two didn't know who Smith was and, at this point, didn't much care. Ian wished he could say the same. He came to this awkward affair, hopeful he'd learn something to help him make the right decision. The only person, besides the children, who didn't look the least bit uncomfortable was Smith.
Welcome.
Gentry kissed Smith on the cheek. He handed her a bottle of wine. Didn't want to arrive empty-handed. Ian didn't know much about wine, but given Smith's profession and the rich look of the gold and maroon label, it had to be expensive.
2007 Valentini Trebbiano di Abruzzo,
Gentry grinned at Smith.
I hope this goes well with pizza.
Smith laughed as if she'd been joking.
When she didn't smile, his brows rose.
Oh, you're serious.
Hell yeah, I'm serious. My cooking skills are limited to reheats and cereal. If you want fine food with this wine, we'll need to order it from Alec.
Jenna groaned quietly, but Smith didn't appear to have heard her.
Pizza's fine. Smith surveyed the room. Is Alec coming?
No, he and Colby are working tonight, Gentry said. Don't worry, though. My sister won't wait too long to meet you.
She then turned to face her family, all of whom literally sat on the edge of their seats, awaiting an introduction. Hunter's laser-sharp focus blazed from beneath his glasses. Sarah smiled warmly. Jed cleared his throat, and Jenna maintained a polite smile. The awkward scene would be perfect for another Meet the Parents sequel.
Everyone, this is Smith. Peter Smith. Smith, this is my dad, Jed, my mom, Jenna, my brother, Hunter, and his wife, Sarah. That's their son, Ty. And you've met Ian.
Gentry's dad stood to shake hands with the man who'd screwed his daughter without even knowing her name. Ian doubted he could be so cool in either man's shoes.
While you all say hello, I'll go open this bottle. I'm sure everyone could use a hearty glass of wine.
Gentry ducked into the kitchen, leaving Smith to fend for himself. Jenna took advantage of Gentry's absence and patted the cushion beside her.
Sit here, Smith. Tell me what you think of our little colt.
Jenna had certainly treated Smith with more interest than she ever had Ian. He had to hand it to her, though. She wasted no time in setting up the chessboard on which she planned to strategize her plan for Gentry to secure full custody. Would Smith be a pawn or a player? Smith picked up Colt out of the playpen and then complied with Jenna's request.
I am blown away by my son.
Those last two words landed like a punch to Ian's gut. After weeks of being responsible for Colt's well-being, Ian disliked his diminished role. Gentry returned to the living room, balancing a tray with seven glasses and a full decanter. She set it on the ottoman and flashed a pretty smile at Smith.
This smells amazing.
Good nose. That's a blend of lemon curd, bosque pear, and hints of smoke. And the texture is fantastic.
Smith poured glasses for everyone, swirled his own, dipped his nose inside the rim, and inhaled deeply. Ian struggled not to roll his eyes. Gentry downed a good chug.
Nice.
Smith laughed, which surprised Ian. He supposed he should be glad that Colt's father wasn't completely pompous, but Gentry's responding smile made it hard not to hate Smith. Jenna, on the other hand, splayed her hand to her chest, eyes wide with horror at her daughter's behavior. Jenna turned to Smith.
I've done a little reading up on your profession. Master Sommelier, that takes a lot of discipline.
It's pretty intense, Smith replied.
Kidnappings, cholera, earthquakes, those things were intense. Studying wine seemed easy in comparison. Ian's expression must have shouted his thoughts, because Gentry muttered,
McJay?
You must be passionate about it. Jenna smiled, as if she was his proud mother. Ian had never seen her treat Jenna so respectfully, and that made him scowl.
Can't imagine enjoying any other job as well.
Smith bounced Colt on his lap.
Even with the long, late hours?
Jenna sipped her wine, acting like she gave two figs about Smith's job.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine there's a lot of travel, too.
Jenna tucked her hair behind her ear and leaned in, utterly fascinated by him and his career. Ian could have barfed in his mouth. Smith lapped up the attention.
That's the best part, actually, especially the trips to Europe.
Must be exciting. Jenna lightly touched his arm, giddy.
And fun.
Sounds almost perfect. Jenna's head then tipped left over a slight shrug of that shoulder.
Of course, all those hours and travel will make it difficult to keep Colt for any stretch of time, won't it?
Boom. Ian hadn't seen that one coming, and he felt the corners of his mouth pull upward in response.
Well played, Mrs. Cabot. Well played.
The room seemed to brighten. But Smith was neither naive nor an idiot. If anything, he appeared to enjoy this game.
Gentry and I will work those things out. Maybe they'll join me on a trip or two. Nothing like travel to educate a child. We can go anywhere and show our boy his roots.
Smith had done the impossible. He'd flabbergasted Jenna into silence. He winked at Gentry, who laughed. Ian, however, didn't laugh. If Gentry wanted Colt to see the world, he'd rather they travel with him so Colt would see the realities, not the resorts.
Her father interjected.
It's good to love your work. Jenna Hunter and I certainly do.
As an afterthought, he added.
And Gentry, too.
Ian watched Gentry suppress the sting of that lag, although, in truth, Gentry didn't love CTC. She loved her family. Didn't they get that yet?
Smith nodded. It's nice that your whole family works together.
Not the whole family, Hunter added. Colby's on her own, with minimal input from us. I understand you know Alec.
Not well. He was a couple of years ahead of me and really focused. Obviously, he went on to do great things. I hope to get to know him better now.
You'll have to stop by a certain tea and say hello. Jenna sipped her wine. Perhaps one day you could work for them so you can be closer to Colt.
I suppose anything's possible, Jenna.
Smith shot Gentry an inscrutable look. Ian had never seen her at a loss for words, but her father stepped up to rescue her from the awkward moment.
How did your folks take the news? Must have been a shock.
Yes.
Smith's wide smile dimmed.
My mom died years ago, but my dad and sister had a lot of questions. Can't say they were thrilled by the circumstances. I suspect neither were you, but they're eager to meet my son.
The situation's not exactly conventional.
Hunter's tone had a bit more bite than the wine.
The best things in life rarely are.
Smith smiled. Gentry's eyes lit with appreciation for that sentiment, proving a certain compatibility with her son's father. She also seemed to admire the fact that her family didn't intimidate him. Meanwhile, Ian stood on the fringe of the group, arms crossed, fingers nearly white from their death grip on his elbows. Perhaps he shouldn't have come. Before anyone else spoke, the doorbell rang.
Must be the pizza.
Gentry slid off the arm of the sofa and trotted to the door, returning with a stack of pizza boxes.
Hunter gave her the thumbs up. I love Il Migliore's pizza. What are our options?
I got you sausage, cherry peppers, and mushroom.
Gentry set the boxes on the edge of the table.
My favorite.
He seemed both delighted and surprised that she knew him so well. Ian didn't understand why none of them seemed to notice how she always paid attention to those details. Sarah helped Gentry spread out the boxes down the center of the dining table, where she'd already set out plates and flatware. Ian, however, couldn't imagine shoving greasy pizza into his already upset stomach.
"I'll get Colt settled to sleep."
Ian reached out for Colt.
"Start without me." "Let me."
Smith stood, still clutching his son. Gentry held her breath, her gaze silently asking Ian to concede.
"Of course."
Ian dropped his arms to his sides. Smith rose from the sofa and started across the living room.
"I'll teach you the routine."
Gentry excused herself from the group and led Smith toward her room. Ian took a seat at the far end of the table, pretending to listen to her family's whispered conversation, a general rubber stamp of approval. Meanwhile, Smith's deep chuckle, big as the man himself, buzzed in Ian's ear like a gnat. Gentry's gentle laughter followed. Those two were like pigs in a blanket already. Ian should be glad for her and Colt. It should make his decision easier. It didn't. When the proud parents returned from Gentry's room, Smith's face glowed. The man wasn't bitter or trapped or angry. He seemed excited, or at least bemused, by the idea of being Colt's dad. And by getting closer to Gentry, Ian had never been a jealous man. But whenever he thought about how Colt came to be, it burned deep inside.
"Ian, Gentry tells me you're a do-gooder."
Smith chomped a bite of pizza, grease from the cheese dribbling down his chin.
"Must have a lot of stories."
"Most don't make for pleasant dinner conversation." Ian reached for his water, remembering a little too late to smile politely.
"When are you leaving?"
Jenna asked. He stifled a snort at the transparent remark.
"Not sure."
"But soon, right? Now that Colt is well, you must be eager to get on with your plans."
Jenna ate her pizza with a knife and fork. That bugged him, even though it was of no consequence.
"Your mom will miss you, Ian," Sarah nodded.
"She's not the only one," Gentry said. Jenna paused mid-bite, her gaze darting from Gentry to Ian and Smith, then to Jed, who shrugged as if to say, "What the hell do I know?" Ian shot his sister an unreadable look that she seemed to understand, giving her confessionary tilt of the head and nonchalant shrug.
"I won't be dead,"
Ian looked at Gentry.
"I'll be back from time to time."
When her family all stared at her, Gentry deflected.
"Pass the pepperoni."
"From what I've heard, Hades riddled with malaria and cholera. Could you be a carrier?"
Smith's smooth voice belied the sharp edge of his question.
"I'd never put Colt at risk, if that's what you're asking." "But how can you be sure?"
The large man swallowed an equally large bite of pizza. In his folksy tone, he added,
"My doctor's always asking me if I've traveled out of the country recently, so I'm guessing it's possible to be a carrier without knowing it."
"Anything's possible," Ian admitted, hating the way Gentry's round eyes widened at Smith's revelation.
"But not probable. I get all available immunizations and take every precaution. From what little I've read so far, infants' immune systems aren't fully developed," Smith said,
as if he were now an expert.
"I'm aware."
Ian sensed everyone wanting to put a few extra inches between themselves and him, just in case.
I've gone back and forth between developing nations for a dozen years, and never once contracted or transferred a serious illness.
Everyone's posture relaxed slightly, until Smith drove another wedge between Ian and the Cabots.
There's always a first time.
Smith covered his strategy with a congenial smile. The guy was smoother than his beloved wines. Ian had done a little reading, too. Restaurants hired people like Smith to help guests choose a good wine and then empty that customer's wallet through a combination of expertise and showmanship. Clearly, Smith had mastered the showmanship part. Would Gentry see through him or be caught in his spell again?
"Let's change the subject," Gentry suggested, reaching for another slice of pizza while carefully avoiding both Smith's and Ian's gazes.
"I want to take a minute and tell my grandson what good manners he has."
Jed flashed a proud smile across the table to Ty.
"Your daddy wasn't nearly as neat as you at your age."
He winked at Hunter, who had to wipe grease from his chin.
"Still isn't, it seems."
Ty didn't react much to that praise. Ian had worked with kids like him, who'd survived trauma, who'd had a rough start in the world with poor nutrition and poverty and chaos. Gentry had temporarily broken through Ty's wall with her playfulness by the lake, but it would be years before he'd have the sense of security that would help him fully connect with this family.
"Sarah's a wonderful woman,"
Hunter rubbed his wife's shoulder.
"I'm constantly amazed at how smoothly she keeps things running with Ty. The calendar is loaded with appointments, mommy and me classes, and playdates. She's teaching him to be organized and neat, have good manners. She's amazing."
"I hope you're taking notes," Jenna said to her daughter. Gentry's body stiffened beside Ian, who was about to defend Gentry's parenting style, when Smith spoke up.
"I'll take notes, too."
Smith winked at Gentry.
"Next time we get together, we should probably talk about parenting expectations and stuff like that."
A flush rose up Gentry's neck.
"How do you mean?"
"Heck if I know. But my sister and her husband debate things all the time, like whether the kids should watch videos, or if sharing is a good or bad thing, or if timeouts work better than other consequences. Now, they're trying to figure out if public school is better than private school."
Gentry's nostrils flared, a reflex warning that she was about to end this conversation.
"My take is real simple, Smith. I'm probably an outlier, but I'm of the play-it-by-ear parenting school of thought, because Colt's an individual, not a robot. He can't be programmed with certain inputs to get some desired output, and even if he could, I don't want that for him. I want him to explore himself and the world, which he can't do if he's bogged down by too much structure and expectation."
Sarah and Hunter exchanged a look. Ian knew Gentry hadn't meant to offend them. She'd merely had her own philosophy and didn't want Smith to muck it up.
"Interesting perspective," Smith said noncommittally. "You certainly started him off with a unique name."
"You don't like Colton?"
Gentry now picked at her cuticles beneath the table. Ian reached for her hand and squeezed.
"I like it fine," Smith shrugged.
"Of course, maybe we can talk about his last name."
Jenna cleared her throat. Gentry's grip on Ian's hand turned her knuckles white. In a deceptively light voice, she managed,
We can talk about anything.
A name change would not be easy for Gentry to swallow. Neither would Jenna's told-you-so gaze.
Smith wiped his mouth and tossed his napkin on the table.
It's only a suggestion. Didn't mean to bring the whole dinner to a halt.
Don't apologize. Gentry attempted a brighter smile. He's your son, too.
That's still a shock, Smith admitted.
We all love him dearly, no matter what name he has, Sarah said, breaking the tension.
My family will, too, once they meet him, Smith said.
The energy in the room downshifted, turning to superficial conversation. Gentry grew particularly quiet, a rarity that suggested she wanted everyone to leave as soon as possible. Sarah must have picked up on her mood, because she'd barely finished eating when she said,
I hate to eat and run, but Ty's bedtime is in 20 minutes, and as already established, I like to keep him on schedule.
No worries.
Gentry kissed her brother and Sarah and hugged Ty. She turned to her parents.
You two might as well go relax, too.
Jenna might have fought to stay if Jed hadn't gripped her arm.
Of course, sweetheart. I'm sure you're tired. It's been an exciting weekend for everyone. Smith, it's been nice to meet you. Jed then turned to Ian. Ian, in case we don't see you before you take off, good luck down there in Haiti.
Thank you.
Ian shook Jed's hand. Jed ushered Jenna out of the house, leaving Ian alone with Gentry and Smith.
I didn't mean to make everyone uncomfortable, Smith said, and I'm not trying to disrupt everything, Gentry. I only want to catch up on what I missed and figure out the best way you and I can go forward to give our son a semblance of normality.
You don't need to apologize for wanting a voice or wanting your son to share your name.
Gentry shrugged.
Once I decided to keep Colt, I should have tried to find you. If I were in your shoes, I'd be a lot less nice about all this.
Can't do anything about the past. And besides, it's not about you or me.
Smith crossed his arms.
Let's focus on the future, for Colt's sake. He's what matters most.
Gentry exhaled with a smile.
Agreed.
Maybe you'd consider hyphenating his last name to Cabot Smith.
Ian couldn't fault Smith for wanting his child to share his name. And he had to admit that, all in all, Smith had handled this life-altering situation with grace.
A compromise, Gentry nodded.
I'm pretty good with those, Smith said.
Ian didn't belong in this conversation, so he headed to the dining table.
I'll clean up.
Thanks, Gentry replied, then turned to Smith.
Excuse me for a minute.
Ian suspected she needed a few minutes alone with her son, even if he was sleeping. She'd said all the right things, but the realities of no longer having Colt to herself could not be easy to accept. Smith watched Gentry go, and then followed Ian into the kitchen.
You might tell me to go to hell, but I'm curious about your relationship with Gentry.
Ian raised a brow, but said nothing.
You're thinking it's none of my business, but considering how it could affect Colt, I think I'm entitled to a little information. Like, do you plan on being part of their lives after you leave this house? Whatever does or doesn't happen, I'm sure Gentry will fill you in. Not good enough, Ian.
Smith reached out to touch Ian's shoulder, but dropped his hand before he made contact.
Is it fair for Colt to get attached to you if you won't be around? And if you hurt his mother, how will that affect my son? I can't control who Gentry dates, but I hope she and you will consider the bigger picture when making decisions. Ian stared at Smith, his own thoughts bundled in a lump of knots, Farah's disappointed tears, Archer's expectations, Gentry's vivid smile. I'll never do anything to hurt Colt. But you're not fully committed. Smith widened his stance. Do you expect Gentry to wait around and handle all this on her own while you're off chasing your other dreams? Gentry's capable of making her own choices. Ian tossed the flatware into the sink with a clatter. She doesn't need either of them making them for her. No, I don't suppose she does. But wouldn't you agree she'd be better off in a relationship with someone in this time zone who also has a permanent interest in Colt's welfare? Ian swallowed. Smith dealt his hand like a croupier. The man's interest in Gentry seemed piqued by the 24 hours he'd spent with her this weekend. I don't presume to decide what's best for her. And if Smith were smart, he wouldn't either. Not that Ian would give him that heads up. Should I assume this is a warning? Do you plan to seduce her again? I won't push, but I'll be here for her and our son. If you really care about her happiness, you won't ask her to wait around for you to decide if and when you can squeeze her and Colt into your schedule. It's pretty presumptuous to assume she'd be interested in you if I bow out. Smith didn't pull his punches. She was before. Gentry meandered into the kitchen, eyeballing them both. Everything okay in here? Peachy. Smith clapped his hands together. I'll leave you two alone for the evening. I'd like to swing by in the morning to say goodbye to Colt before I catch my flight. Maybe then you and I can discuss bringing Colt to visit my family after Ian goes to Haiti. Ian's jaw hurt from all the clenching it had done tonight. Of course, Gentry replied. Smith kissed her cheek. See you around 9, okay? We'll be here, Ian said, sliding an arm over Gentry's shoulder, sending his own message to Smith. Good night. Smith nodded at Ian. I can show myself out. Don't be silly, Gentry said, shrugging Ian off. I'll walk you out. As soon as they left the kitchen, Ian viciously crushed the pizza boxes, pretending that each one was Smith's head. Chapter 18. Bittersweet. According to Merriam-Webster, pleasure accompanied by suffering or regret. According to me, falling in love. Gentry returned to the kitchen to find Ian scrubbing the counters with enough vigor to strip their sheen. You okay, McJ? Yep. He neither smiled nor tossed the rag aside to pull her into a kiss. Each circular swipe of his arm coiled his energy tighter until he looked like a viper waiting to strike. She reached out to still him. I think they're clean. Ian released the rag. Sighing, he raked one hand through his beautiful waves of hair, something she'd love to do. Quite an evening. From her perspective, it had been brilliant. No arguments or tears or threats. Everyone made it through the entire meal without storming off. Not something that could be said about every Cabot get-together, especially not one with these stakes. You don't like Smith, do you?
I don't know him well enough to make that call.
Oh, please. As if Ian needed more than 2 seconds to make one of his infamous snap judgments. He tilted his head, leveling his gaze, and added,
Neither.